Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Leo Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And for today, we are looking at the economy once again, as we tend to do on the Business Day Spotlight. But for today, we're looking at it from a sort of different point of view. We're looking at some of the impacts on employees, and we're looking at how the lockdown has actually impacted employees around South Africa, together with some of the ways in which employers have been able to respond to the regulations that were given by government. Are people safe out there? So those are the things that we are looking at. And obviously, because next week, Thursday, we have 7 days exactly before we come to the end of this lockdown period, a question needs to really be asked about whether or not it is feasible to be reopening the economy. But before we get into all that, we are joined on the line by Professor Karen Runciman, together with Linford Dorr, who are both from the University of Johannesburg, to help us to unpack some of these issues. They've actually co-authored a new study called Profit or Workers' Lives, Employer Responses to the COVID-19 Pandemic. And from my understanding, it's been done by the Center for Social Change at the University of Johannesburg, together with the Casual Workers Advice Office, a registered nonprofit organization that's based in Germiston. Now, the report, I've sort of briefly gone through it, and it's quite scary, some of the things that are going on, but it actually provides an insight into the response of employers following the lockdown that was instituted in terms of the Disaster Management Act, together with its amendments. And it's also intended to provide a snapshot of how employers' responses have been, and to highlight the significant gaps in protection for workers during this period. Ladies and gentlemen, hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Hi, Madeo. Good, thanks, and you?
Good, good, good. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. I think, Professor, I'll start with you, because we are about 13, 14 days into the lockdown. I've personally done some research in the past in an academic setting, and that stuff tends to take a long time. How did you guys put this together so quickly?
Well, we were very fortunate in being able to work with the Casual Workers Advice Office, which is an organisation based in Germiston, as you've said, that works with literally thousands of workers each year, helping them to organise and to gain rights. So when the lockdown happened, the Casual Workers Advice Office was in an ideal position to be able to reach out to a wide range of workers in a range of different industries to be able to track what's happening in their companies. And in the report, we're able to analyse 75 company reports that are forwarded to us from workers that are giving us in-depth insight as to what's happening in their workplaces.
And I guess that methodology, how did you guys actually go about it? Because I can imagine that to have a proper analysis and concrete findings, you sort of have to go out there and really be digging. What type of information were you actually looking for, and how did you go about actually getting it?
What we did was a combination of two things. One was our staff in the Casual Workers Advice Office reached out to companies that they have already been working with, in some cases for a period of a number of years, and were able very quickly, therefore, able to gather a picture of what's happening both at companies that are continuing to operate, as well as those that have been shut down. And that was also supplemented with a hotline that the Casual Workers Advice Office had established to get reports not just from Gauteng, where obviously the Casual Workers Advice Office is based, but to get some insight from across the country as to what happened. So that's how we were able to generate the data that goes into this report.
And then are you able to share who some of the companies were, or was it anonymized from that point of view?
For the protection of the workers, we decided to anonymize which workplaces, we decided to anonymize the names of the workplaces. This is because we feared that there might be reprisals against workers for actually revealing the conditions under which they are working. And this is unfortunately something that is in the experience of the Casual Workers Advice Office, that when workers try to take up their rights, they are often disciplined for doing so. But what I can say is a number of the companies are large national companies employing often more than 1,000 workers in their particular workplaces, as well as small to medium enterprises. So this is a good cross-section of South Africa's economy, I would say, although it is not nationally representative.
Linford, I'm going to bring you in just to sort of get a sense of what some of the key findings have been from what you guys observed, and did anything actually either stick out to you or surprise you from doing the study?
As far as the key findings go, the easiest way to understand them is to probably break them down into two groups. There's companies that have remained open as essential service providers, and of those companies of the 75 companies in the report, 35 of those companies were still operating. And then in the second group, there's those companies who have closed under the lockdown. And of the 75, there's 40 companies in this report that have closed. At the companies that have remained open as essential services, one of the key findings we've come across is that 30 of the 35 have not provided any protective equipment, or PPE as they call it. 29 have not undertaken measures to ensure that social distancing is taking place in the workplace, and 28 have not provided transport to workers. On top of this, 22 of those 35 companies haven't provided workers even with hand sanitizer. So the key finding from workplaces that are operating under the lockdown as essential services is that a majority of them are not complying with the health and safety standards and are effectively not complying with the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which clearly says that every employer shall provide and maintain, as far as is reasonably practicable, a working environment that is safe and without risk to the health of their employees. A second key finding from these workplaces that continue to operate as essential services is that, in fact, there are some workplaces, and particularly in the food and beverage and chemical sectors, that continue to produce non-essential luxury goods that are clearly not required to fight the virus. And in the research process, workers at many of these types of companies have aired their frustration and anger at being at having their lives be put on the line effectively to produce goods that they say are not going to do anything to combat the virus. If I can just go then to the key findings on the companies that have shut down, is that out of the 9 out of the 40 companies that we've looked into, only 9 of them have applied for the COVID-19 temporary employee relief scheme under the UIF. It's important to note that as the regulations stand, the onus is on employers to apply for the scheme, which the Department of Labor has said is to prevent millions and millions of applications coming from workers themselves. But what we're clearly finding is that employers are not taking it upon themselves to do so. And workers find themselves in a very difficult situation where their companies have locked down. And in many cases, their employers aren't answering their phones, aren't replying to emails, and are just giving no indication as to whether or not they've applied for the grant, whether or not they're going to offer any sort of support to their employees. I think another key finding to note is that there's a number of workplaces that the Casual Workers Advice Office works with, where workers have previously alerted us to the fact that their employer is not contributing to the UIF, and under the current regulations, all of these workers, through no fault of their own, won't access the UIF COVID-19 TERS grant. I think that summarizes just basically what's happening at both workplaces that are open and workplaces that have closed.
It's actually quite scary hearing you describing some of these findings, especially the ones around the fact that there are businesses and employers that are not providing the personal protective gear that's meant to be given to workers on the front line and people that are still producing the essential goods. Do you have a reason, and I invite whether it's Karen or Linford here, do you find reasons why they're not doing this? Because I imagine that if your workers are not feeling safe, then it might drive down productivity, effects on morale. I would think that it's in the best interest of the business owners to make sure that their employees are safe, and you know, things like that. So it doesn't really make sense. Did you find why they are not doing some of these things?
I think what this reflects, and especially from the experience of the Casual Workers Advice Office, who I've conducted research with over a long period of time, is it's not as if employers not complying with health and safety standards is new in South Africa. Unfortunately, this is very, very common. Workers at the Casual Workers Advice Office often make complaints about the fact that regularly employers are not providing safety equipment. So under the crisis of the pandemic, it's no surprise actually that employers are still not providing essential safety equipment. And what this also points to is the ineffectiveness of the Department of Employment and Labour's inspectorate. Currently, we have something like less than 2,000 inspectors for the whole country, and this is simply not sufficient. And this has meant that employers know that they will get away with not complying with basic regulations, whether that's paying UIF or whether it's complying with occupational health and safety. So I think what this is also giving us an insight to is the lack of enforcement of labour legislation in South Africa, and in a time of a crisis like the COVID-19 pandemic, that this actually exposes workers even more than they are normally exposed to.
I think that it's important to just note that the Department of Labour published a guideline in March already requiring employers to undertake risk assessments in light of the COVID-19 pandemic to ensure that their workplaces are safe. And it's not just an issue of adequate PPE, it's also an issue of the department said that part of this risk assessment means to like ensure that social distancing, as far as is reasonably possible, is put in place in the workplace, which means reorganizing production in certain circumstances. And obviously what we're finding is that hasn't taken place. On the issue of PPE, I think this brings us to a bit of a bigger discussion that isn't actually covered in some of our research. But employers are saying that they just don't have access to PPE. They can't get hold of masks, for example. And I think that's not an easy solution to overcome. I think what we're seeing all over the country now, we're getting reports as the Casual Workers Advice Office from allied organizations, is that workers on the front line, in essential services on the front line, so healthcare workers in communities, the community healthcare workers in the hospitals and in the clinics, are saying that they've already run out of PPE themselves. So it makes sense then that workers in the factories will also not have access to the PPE. This brings us to a bigger discussion, of course, then, is that why are we running out of PPE? Why are some of these companies, for example, continuing to make non-essential luxury goods like chocolates, like the Nutella and Ferrero? Why are some of the chemical sector companies continuing to make luxury cosmetics that cost a fortune, instead of repurposing to produce those basic necessities that are needed by essential workers on the front line in the healthcare sector and the essential workers in the factories? I think that's something that this report, that the findings of this report open the question to, but don't make a serious contribution to.
Yeah, I feel like the more that you guys talk, it sort of sheds light on some of the, I guess, the broader issues that are out there. Like what you said at the, like what you said, that in the past a lot of employers have not been observing health and safety regulations. So it's no surprise that the same trend sort of continues now. I guess we all think that because there's such a big national effort around COVID-19, that it's just something that all businesses will be taking seriously. But on the UIF, not UIF, sorry, on the relief for employees, I think in terms of the findings, this is another one I'm quite interested to know. How is it that for some of the employers would not be applying for this thing for their workers? I can understand PPE because, as you said, some employers are finding it hard to actually get their hands on PPE. But in terms of the employment insurance, all of that stuff that government is making available, it's not like the companies have to pay the money. The money's coming from the government and it's going to employees. What's the problem there?
Look, that's not an easy question to answer. At many workplaces, employers might just not have been contributing to the UIF previously, which under these regulations means that their employees, their workers are not able to access those grants anyway. But a number of workplaces, no doubt, are clearly also compliant with the UIF, but just not applying for the grants for their workers. And I think, again, this comes to an issue that's prior to this COVID-19 pandemic, and that's just simply the callousness of the employer class in South Africa. I think because of the mass of unemployed people in this country, there's just an acknowledgement that there's always another worker that can replace their own worker. So for years, they've never had to look after the interests of their workers to ensure that they keep coming back to work because they can just replace them. And this is clearly no different. They just seem to have no interest in ensuring that their workers survive through this crisis.
I mean, I would really just echo what Limford is saying, that some of the reasons for why employers have not been applying for this, some of them it will be because they are non-compliant. So they are breaking the law currently by not paying, registering their workers and paying that over to the fund. The latest figures we could get from the Department of Employment and Labour suggest that when they do payroll audits, as many as 30% of employers are not compliant. So there's large levels of non-compliance in South Africa. But I think, again, echoing what Limford has said, it is the fact that South Africa is still based on a system of cheap black labour and where that cheap black labour is disposable. So employers in this circumstance are taking the easiest route. They are not applying to the C19 Tourist Fund. Some of them are saying it's difficult, that documentation that's required is difficult to get under the lockdown, and maybe that is true. But I think ultimately it does show that in South Africa, most employers do not care for their employees in normal times, and certainly not under the crisis that we are currently facing.
Can I just come in to add one more point? An important finding that I forgot to mention is that a number of these companies are, in fact, forcing their workers to take their accrued leave over this period instead of applying for the UIF grant. And that's a clear indication of an employer looking to ensure that their workers don't have access to leave later in the year, so that their production can continue, so that they continue to produce profits later in the year. And I mean, the figures we have at the moment suggest that 22,000 companies have so far applied for the UIF grant on behalf of their workers. And in fact, in an article by Carol Payton in the Business Day yesterday, I think, she notes that up to 1.8 million employers are on the UIF database. So that's a huge, huge disjuncture between those that have applied and those that are actually compliant with the UIF and those that could apply for their workers.
Once again, I don't want to keep using the word scary, but the state of affairs really does sound like it's either dire or, you know, to use Linford's word, the callous nature of employers at the moment is quite shocking. And I think one of the silver linings of a crisis like COVID is that it allows, I guess, studies like this to actually shed some light on issues that are quite prevalent but normally fly under the radar. Wow. So I guess as we round up the discussion, then one of our questions becomes, is it feasible to reopen the economy? And I think it's a discussion that is being had in many corners around the country. A lot of people, and not even only South Africa, we know that in the United States, Donald Trump is really keen on just, you know, restarting everything. And there's a lot of anxiety around the world and in South Africa. So from the engagements that you guys have had, employers, employees, etc., what is the feeling on the ground?
But I think this is a really difficult question that faces South Africa about how do we approach this issue. There is obviously the huge health concerns of if we reopen the economy, could we, you know, be increasing the exposure and the spread and potential deaths of people from this virus. However, on the other hand, there is also the acute socioeconomic crisis caused by the lockdown of people because, you know, the facilities that are available for employers to make use of for state benefits to assist their workers are not being taken advantage of, that workers are left in a very desperate situation. And this did come through very clearly in the worker testimonies, particularly for those who are currently working, that they are very scared of the risks of working, but they are desperate. And that's why they're still at work, because, you know, their wages are so low and the struggle for survival is so difficult that many of them are at work because there is almost no other choice. So I think it is a very, very difficult choice ahead of us. And of course, we're only talking here about workers in the formal economy, although obviously there have been moves to assist informal workers. There have been huge problems there and about their livelihoods. And it's a real crisis that confronts us as we try to answer that question. I think what is absolutely necessary to even begin to contemplate reopening the economy is the health and safety measures have to be in place. And as we see in the report, they're currently not. So any expansion, reopening of the economy really needs to happen with these health and safety measures in place, given that the risk of the virus continues and will continue until there is a vaccine.
Linford, your thoughts on the matter, and as you talk, perhaps your thoughts on whether, if this period is extended, do you anticipate that the findings that you highlighted earlier on will, that things will just continue and you get worse things on all those scales, or do you anticipate any type of shifts if we do continue?
Thanks. Look, I think we've spoken a lot about the role of the employers in this scenario. I think maybe just to answer your question, it's best to focus on the role of the state and the regulations that they passed so far. It's clear that this government is not going to put the onus on employers to apply and mandate employers to apply, for example, for the UIF grant for their workers. And that gives us an indication into the fearfulness that this government has for big business. It's clear, I think the Casual Workers Advice Office has taken a position that to survive this crisis, we need a serious ramp up of the production of essential items. It's clear that there's not enough medical supplies, there's not enough masks to get us through this crisis until a time when a vaccine is created. And here, the role of the state becomes important once again. You're asking if we should reopen the economy. I would say, from reading the as much scientific reports as I can, that would be a disaster. But what is necessary is to ramp up production of essential services And what the state has done so far is simply to leave the provision of essential services in the hands of employers, in the hands of the free market. And all over the world, I think a few months ago, to call for state intervention in private businesses would have been laughed off. But all over the world, we're seeing that it's absolutely necessary to survive this crisis for the state to insist that many of these employers who have the productive capacities to produce the types of items that we need are forced to do so. So to answer your question, opening up the economy, no, but ramping up production of essential services, yes.
So that's been it for today's discussion. Very fascinating. As you heard, we're talking to Karen and Linford just about their study looking into employer responses to the COVID-19 pandemic. So key insights coming in, you know, just saying that that the crisis has actually shed light on the fact that a lot of employers who have thus far not been applying or contributing to things like UIF, that behavior has continued and seen employees not having access to the grant that's been made available in light of the lockdown. Also, this question of whether or not to open the economy is a very complex one, like what Karen is saying, that on the one hand, you've got the socioeconomic crisis where a lot of people just can't afford to be at home. But at the same time, you have to think about the health and safety of a lot of South Africans. And then Linford ending off by just saying that a key thing is just making sure that there is a ramping up of production for those essential goods. Just to end off, Karen, this research, is it widely available? How can people perhaps engage with you guys?
It's available on the UGA website and it's free to download. So hopefully it will be widely available.
Okay, so that's been us. We were with Professor Karen Runciman together with Linford Dorr from the University of Johannesburg. They have the new study called Profitable Workers' Lives, Employer Responses to the COVID-19 Pandemic. That was a study that was conducted by the Center for Social Change at the University of Johannesburg together with the Casual Workers Advice Office that is based in Germiston. So that's been it for today's edition. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That is under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can also review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Leo Gavaza, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.